promised a two-parter, long, big show here today. You're getting a lot of content leading up into the last week of spring training. Every year, our good friend David Mills, contributor to the show, does a preseason and in-season top pitching prospects, talking Mets, top positional prospects. And yeah, I know there's a million prospect lists out there, and we don't like to be copycats here at the Talking Mets podcast, but Dave does great work, and he's got some really good credentials. And let's put it this way. You may not have heard of him yet, but after this segment, if you haven't, you will. Dave, welcome to the program. I know you've been on before, but now it's the nitty-gritty time. The season is starting. When the prospect list comes out and at least the weather here in New York starts to break, you know baseball season's upon us. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Hey, Mike. How you doing today?
So you always like to break the pitching and hitting prospects up. That's the way it's been done here since you started contributing here at the Talking Mets podcast. Why don't you do a couple of things? Give the listeners an idea of, you know, you have a training background. You ran a baseball academy. You're a big Mets fan, but you're also a baseball analyst. You're a guy that has had the opportunity through your training academy to learn a little bit about how teams evaluate. And you've come up with your own brew here of how to look at an organizational's top pitching prospects. So give the listeners an idea a little bit of who you are and how you came to this pitching and hitting, separation of church and state, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, as a Mets fan, I go back to 1962, actually before that, because I was actually just old enough to get into the original drafting, you know, how the Mets came about from they were going to have a team in the Continental League, and then it ended up being an MLB team in the National League. And I actually remember all that stuff. I remember the plans to build Shea Stadium. My first game was at the Polo Grounds on September 14th, 1962. And I went to two games there in June of 63 to see Stan Musial playing a doubleheader. And, you know, so I'm a Mets fan from way, way back. As far as my baseball background, played some baseball in high school. Played in semi-pro league in the tri-state area. And then, you know, I've been active when I had a son, and he was very interested in baseball, you know, trained him. And then we opened a baseball academy. I was really pleased with what we did there. We've basically concentrated on catching and hitting. A little bit of pitching as well. It was indoors. We were air conditioned. We were heated, and this was in northwest part of the country in Vancouver, Washington. And I also have several friends who are elite scouts in a few organizations. And one of my good friends is a guy who used to be the GM of the Mets and the Cardinals, Joe McDonald, who's 96 years young, and you know, I have a son who's in a major league front office as well. So my connections are pretty good. I know people at, I think, about six major league front offices. And, you know, I try to read as much as I can. I listen as much as I can. And I can get out there, you know, certified as an instructor. And that's my baseball background.
And I'll tell you what, doing these lists are hard. You know, there's tons of lists out there. I mean, I could go out there and I could look at data and stats and give my opinion. And I always say I have to be careful. Anytime I evaluate on the show, say I like this guy or like that guy, I'm coming from a novice approach. I'm not a talent evaluator. I'm not a scout. I didn't play at a high level. I'm only giving information or access to information and opinion based on publicly available stuff. Baseball Savant, Baseball Reference, Fangraphs. There's so much more underlying information out there. Now, you also have the access to that information, but I think you also kind of understand how organizations look at it. So while you're building this, how did you build this list? There's a lot of challenges to building the pitching list and then subsequently the offensive positional player list, because to do this right, you can't just look at numbers. And quite honestly, it's hard to even get video and access to the kind of video you need to make an educated opinion. Or ranking, I should say.
Right. I mean, and that is the toughest thing. This takes a lot of work, a lot of looking at whatever video is available to me. You know, major league front offices can look at an entire game. You and I can only look at highlights. So highlights doesn't tell you what somebody's demeanor is when they're struggling on the mound. or at the plate, or in the field. So, it takes, now there's a lot more metrics available, a lot more stats, at a lot of places. There's Baseball Savant, Fangraphs, and Baseball Reference, and others. So that's a big help. But, the eyes and the ability to, with pitchers, kind of break down the repertoire, see what's working, what's not working, look at the splits. It as I said, it's very time consuming. The reason that we split this up into pitching and position players is I don't think, especially today, where pitchers never taken at bat, never run the bases, it doesn't make any sense to group them together in a list of the top 30, in my opinion, or 25 or 50. It makes sense to break down the pitchers, break down the hitters.
So the exciting part about the Mets organization has been the arms, and I think that that's kind of the way you started, and I think it's the right way to start. Everybody's looking for, the next big thing, obviously, and everybody talks about McClain. They talk about Tong. When you did this ranking, I mean, McClain obviously, number one, Tong number two, I believe. Talk a little bit about those top guys, and I think not that it's a surprise, but you're really high on Christian Scott, and he's a guy that I think in a lot of ways has been forgotten right now in the organization. I mean, I'll be honest, last year I forgot about him, and then coming into spring, it's like, oh yeah, they have Christian Scott too.
Well, I think I had Christian Scott number four in the rankings last year, even though I knew he wasn't going to play, because that you still have to consider
For
who's
the
under
record,
contract.
Dave and I were live in the building in Tampa for Kristen Scott's debut. That
That's
was part
right.
of my Tampa trip. That's when we met down there, and that was a fun night, and that was an electric night. And he pitched well that night, even though the
He
Mets
did,
lost.
and also McClain and Tong have swapped places. I hadn't. McClain, I had Tong as number one last year, and with McClain came on like gangbusters. He just, and that's the thing about baseball. You can have a prospect who just it just clicks, and suddenly in one half a season, he's moving from the fourth ranked prospect or the sixth ranked prospect up to the number two or even the number one prospect. I don't think anybody had Tong last year as number one, and there weren't that many that had McClain as number two. But Christian Scott gives you, a nice mix. He throws in the mid to high 90s, and he's come back from his Tommy John, maybe a little bit stronger with a little bit better velocity than before. His issue was always about giving up the dingers, giving up those long balls, and that's something that kind of comes with experience, and it comes with having good catching, good coaching, and all of that. But also comes with your repertoire. So keeping hitters off balance, keeping changing their eye level and all of that. So I think that he's going to certainly, all of these guys except McClain are going to start in double A or triple A this year. And then we'll see what happens because the Mets front line starters are loaded right now.
Absolutely. And look, I think, look, the top three, we all know. And I think, I guess the question I would say is, we know McClain's going to be in the rotation. Everybody's freaking out about a couple of bad pitches in the WBC, but McClain will be in the rotation. And he very well could push Peralta for number one status. But Tong is the one that some have questions about. How good is he? Can he, he's shown inconsistencies in the short span of time that fans have seen him. Christian Scott is going to be building himself up. When is he going to be ready? Where do you see who gets the call? Do you think Tong is the first guy if there's an injury that gets the call? Do you think he spends the majority of the year at AAA? And Scott, knowing he's coming off the Tommy John, how long before we see him even be able to viably give the Mets some innings? And I also wonder if these kids will go the route of what Stearns did in Milwaukee with Woodruff and Burns and even Peralta. And give him some time in the bullpen.
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if any starting pitcher makes an appearance this year other than Tong or Scott. I don't think it's going to be necessary. Of course, anything can change at the end of July at the trade deadline. But, as long as the Mets win, as long as there's not more than one starting pitching injury, I just don't see anybody but those two guys getting the call. And right now, I don't even think David Stearns or Mendoza or Justin Willard has any idea who that would be. I think it's too early to make that call. But I don't see any reason that either one of those guys shouldn't be able to answer the bell.
You talk about Tong, and I think that's the one that everybody has questions with. If you go to the piece, which again is free, available for everybody at the Extra Innings, go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get it, and just go and look at the 2026 top pitching prospects post that came up earlier in the week. So Tong comes up, everybody sees the fastball, throwing fastballs mainly last September. But you've talked about a bit of a refined mix that he's putting in with a cutter. And you've also offline, you and I have talked, you've been impressed with how he seems to absorb and work on his repertoire. And you're very bullish on Tong. A lot of the fans after September became bearish on Tong, or even said, hey, maybe that's the guy you trade. He's the guy that's not going to make it. But you seem to be very much high on Tong. The bar is obviously, McClain has set a very high bar for any prospect that comes after him.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who thought they would trade Tong is just, I don't know what that person's thinking, because obviously the Mets weren't about to trade Tong for just about anything. So what you have here is a guy who has two really outstanding pitches in his fastball, and his changeup is pretty good. But if he can develop the curveball and the cutter and maybe eliminate his slider, then I think this guy is what it takes to be a power pitcher with the right pitches, the right repertoire to keep hitters off balance. He certainly got brought up too early last year. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind. I would have preferred if he hadn't been brought up, but it was a necessity to bring him up. I mean, they just had nowhere to go with Senga and Minaya both under the weather with their arms. So I think nobody should judge him on those games, although if you recall, the first game he pitched, he was pretty magnificent. And
He pitched really well against San Diego too. I mean, he showed flashes. I think it was hard. You put a kid in a really tough spot, got hit hard in Chicago, and a couple other spots he got hit hard. But in general, considering he wasn't even expected to be part of the solution, he was in Brooklyn for crying out loud. I think that's pretty impressive when you really, when it's all said and done. Really impressive.
You know what? That cutter, if it comes along, which it appeared that it was coming along, I really think if you can fine tune that at Syracuse against some guys who are, 4A guys who have hit in the major leagues, I think that's going to be something he needs at least a half a season of work, just like Christian Scott needs a half a season of work just to get back to pitching regularly and being effective. And he's got about the same amount of, he's got four pitches. Guys who were just a fastball curveball pitcher, Seaver was a fastball slider pitcher. You can work on things a little bit differently than somebody who has four or five or six pitches. You need more time. It's like a switch hitter. You spend twice as much time working your craft as the guy who's in this case throwing two, somebody who's throwing two pitches as opposed to four or six. The important point to remember, and baseball is not forgiving on these things. You've got to put in the work on each pitch. Now, if you want to see something about the pitches, it's in my article. It goes into a lot of depth in terms of how these repertoires lay out to each pitcher.
And you go into a lot of depth of those top three. I mean, more so than probably what we've seen in other prospect lists, most available data. That's something a little bit different, I think, if the fans are reading this, that you really decided to dive deep into the guys that those are the guys that very well could be the difference makers in the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, as fandom goes, you have the people who are truly interested in all these, minutiae, all the minutiae involved in pitching and hitting and defense and base running. And you don't have to be. So I write this for the person who wants to go deeper, who wants to really understand when Ron Darling is making a point about pitching or Jerry is making a point on the pre and post game show. So you can have a better understanding. Print this thing out, and keep it near you when you're watching a game, because it can, when they refer to something, you can refer to this and see exactly what they're talking about. That's what I'm writing here for the person who wants to get deeper. And if you don't, that's fine too. Just enjoy the game. I don't think everybody has to be deeply involved in this kind of detail.
Some may say, hey, Mills put Ryan Lambert in the top five. And here's a guy who's a bullpen arm, maybe a future closer, has struggled with command throughout his tenure in the minor leagues. In a lot of ways, Dylan Ross was the belle of the ball when it came to bullpen arms, and he didn't even get a chance to show his wares this spring. They just sent him back to minor league camp, which makes you wonder, is something else going on there? Did they see something else? A little surprised that a bullpen arm would make it into the top five. Is there some recency bias there with the 3 innings he pitched? He was dominant in the spring, got sent down today. Some fans are annoyed about it. I'm not surprised. I think it was a push for him to be called into the bullpen, especially where you don't really have a lot of optionable arms in that bullpen to begin with. But I did think that he may make it to the a little bit further, maybe to the very last few days, and it sounds like from some of the information I've seen out there, it was a tough call for the Mets front office. But a little surprised that a bullpen arm made it into the top five ahead of some of the other arms that a Santucci, a Will Watson, guys like that that may, as starters, have brighter careers in the rotation.
Yeah, I actually think that Santucci is going to end up as a relief pitcher. And for a number of reasons that I'll just get to before Lambert, he's a left-handed pitcher. The Mets, for some reason, for the several years now, have been short on left-handed pitching, whether it's starting pitch in their system. I mean, whether it's starting pitching, whether it's relief pitching, he's a two-pitch pitcher. And that works in a bullpen, especially in a setup role. It doesn't necessarily work for a starting pitcher unless his stuff is overpowering, and it's not. So that's where I see him. But as far as Lambert goes, he's got that devastating, fastball. He's got a sonic arm. To leave him out of the top five, well, I just couldn't see doing it. And again, this is my opinion based on a lot of research and a lot of study, but it doesn't mean I'm always right. I like him, man. This is a guy who could be up there sometime in mid-season. Again, there was no room for rookie pitchers and guys with very little experience. David Stearns has gone out and he does his thing. He brings in like a million arms. It's unbelievable when you look at their roster list below the box score, how many players he's got out there. I don't know if it's the most in baseball because I haven't gone around counting, but it has to be up there in the top five. And he's got some terrific arms of experienced relief pitchers, and there's no reason to rush somebody. And the command issues, every one of these young pitchers has command issues to a certain degree. There's only two guys in the Met system who I have on my list who I think are just gifted command pitchers, and Zach Thornton and Wander Suarez, and that's
Who are
why.
not really talked about. And before we get to them, because I think Thornton is the guy that you and I have talked about that might be a sleeper pitch today against the Blue Jays. The thing about Lambert and the exciting thing, and this has been one of my biggest criticisms of the Mets for years and years and years and years. And it's one of the reasons why they've had to go out and spend money on middle relievers, potentially have to offer Edwin Diaz a record-setting contract for the second time, is they haven't been able to develop bullpen arms. Now, Lambert has risen to the top ahead of a Dylan Ross. You also mentioned a Ben Simon. Brett Banks was a name I brought up there in the offseason. Peter Cusso, a right-handed pitcher. The thing about Simon is local kid from Princeton, New Jersey, two-pitch pitcher, not a big guy either. And in this day and age, when you're not 6'5", you kind of get overlooked in baseball. They don't like short guys. And this is coming from a guy who's 5'6", Mike Silva here. So David Mills is much taller than Mike Silva, so he has no issues with height. But before we get to what Thornton and Yoander Suarez, both who get overlooked, particularly Suarez, you have to say that the Mets are a little, you didn't mention all these names that I brought up from bullpen arms. But the Mets are in a much better place with maybe starting to, like the Dodgers, like the Yankees, like the Rays, bringing up some of their own guys and be able to plug those bullpen arms in an environment where you might have some restrictions on payroll in the very near future. This will be big.
Well, think about it. Right now, they have, let's look at their starters. So they have just about every, they have three guys who are going to be free agents at the end of this season because Holmes has a opt out. And if he has a season that's as good or better than last year, you could bet he's going to opt out.
Sure, he'll get some money. Although
And
with the
then,
CBA, that might freak a little guys out a little bit. That could be interesting if there's a lockout. That might freak guys out about, hey, I don't know what's going on. Let me take a look at the landscape here.
I'll be shocked if there's not a lockout. So you have Holmes, you have now Senga, Minaya. They have 2 years on the on their deals. So the timing, Peralta is going to be a free agent, right? The timing on also David Peterson. So you got three guys to be done at the end of this year. You got three guys done at the end of next year. So two guys. So what's going to happen? Well, it's perfect for Tong. It's perfect for Scott. It's perfect for Thornton. It's perfect for maybe somebody else. So the Mets, the timing on this is exquisite, and they could still go after Skubal. I actually think they're going to make a heavy play for Skubal. And I don't know. I mean, signing, are they going to sign Peralta to an 8-year contract? I don't think there's a chance in hell they're
I
going to
would
do
let
that.
Peralta prove himself, and I think then we're going to go into the lockout. Maybe the early, depending on how quickly these guys want to sign, you may have a Peralta v. Skubal decision the Mets have to make,
Yeah,
and it may be a tough one if Peralta is a likable guy, pitches well here, helps them go deep into the postseason. Who knows how deep they go? It could be interesting. It could be. There's a lot of turnover this starting rotation could have in the next 12 months, 12 to 18 months. A
and
lot.
there's, you know, it's funny because you were mentioning relief pitching, and I think at the beginning of the Ryan Lambert piece, I talked about the fact that the Mets for a few decades were literally supplying stoppers, closers to the entire MLB. So you had Tug McGraw, Skip Lockwood, Jeff Reardon, Rick Aguilera, Randy Myers, Orozco, McDowell, Jason Isringhouse, Bobby Parnell, Heath Bell, Juris Familia, and Paul Sewald, who's still closing, or he may be the closer for the Diamondbacks again this year. But the Mets were putting out, especially in the 80s and 90s, they were putting out relief pitchers like crazy, especially closers. So I think that's what you're referring to. They put plenty of relief pitchers out there, but not necessarily closers or high leverage relief pitchers. Lambert has the potential to be a really high leverage relief pitcher. And you know what? I mean, he was on my list for quite some time now ahead of Dylan Ross. Now, what's gone on with Dylan Ross? One of our readers was asking about it. I have no idea. I thought it was a little mysterious about what they did. It could indicate that there might be something that's bothering him physically, or maybe they weren't happy with it. This is just speculation on my part. Maybe they weren't happy with his work ethic. Maybe there was something he had to deal with. We'll probably never know because they've been very quiet about it. And I think I mentioned to you the other day, we don't have Andy Martino to tell us these things anymore.
Right. It's kind of you have a different you have some new faces on the beat and at SNY, so we'll see if they can live up to some of the information that Martino gave. Zach Thornton is your sleeper.
Yes.
And he pitched today, and you were telling me even before he pitched today, we were talking earlier in the week, and you're like, hey, I really like this guy. And then I'm watching some highlights today, and I'm like, wow, it's almost prophetic that we had this conversation. And you put Thornton ahead of Wenninger, who got some buzz this spring, ahead of Lambert, and you like him. He doesn't throw hard. Not so ready. He's probably not going to contribute for a couple of years, but you like him a lot. Who knows? Maybe he becomes one of their top prospects, pitching prospects after some of the other guys graduate, and maybe he never finds his way to Citi Field if he gets traded. But he's a lefty, and I don't know if you have a comp for him. But we always got to be careful with comps.
Well,
But why do you like Thornton so much?
he looks a little like Max Fried. He's
Yep.
thin, he's kind of, he doesn't throw ridiculously hard. I mean, He's a command guy. I mean, he 671 minor league pitchers who logged 70 innings. He had just 11 walks in 73 innings. So that's a 4% walk rate, which, by the way, Wander Suarez, the same thing. But he had more.
Very rare in today's ball game. And
Yes.
sometimes, and I think we'll get to him in a bit, Justin Willard, I think you're going to see a much different philosophy and hopefully performance when it comes to bases on balls. That's been a real big problem for this team for a few years. And is one of the reasons why they've underachieved or struggled, even in the OMG summer that nearly derailed them, the walks in the OMG summer.
Well, for Thornton, being a left-handed pitcher, there's so much value. If I was a GM, I'd be always. I've talked with Joe McDonald about this so much. You look for left-handed pitching. You look for left-handed hitting. You look for switch hitters. You're looking for, whatever disruption you can create. So, but left-handed pitchers like this, I mean, he's not a. Some people would say he was kind of like the old definition of a soft tosser, but not really. But he had 78 strikeouts in 73 innings. He had a under 2 ERA. This is impressive stuff from a young pitcher, and you got to understand, the guys who throw the hardest are going to have the most trouble with command. So if somebody
Sure.
throws 92 to 94, they're probably going to have less problems with command than somebody who's throwing 96 to 99. But everything about him is just so interesting. His gyro slider is, boy, oh boy. I mean, it's a two-plane gyro slider that moves two ways. And, it really, I mentioned it here, it just neutralizes both lefties and righties. He's very effective against both. He's got four pitches that are really good. And like most, there's always a pitch you have to improve, and it's his changeup here. If he re improves the changeup, this guy he's got a ceiling that I can't even imagine. And again, the Mets know this. It's not, if it's apparent to me, they know it.
Right,
Okay.
right.
It's, I'm not a baseball genius. I have to study a lot. I have to talk to people. I have to look at a lot of video. But this is stuff to be excited about. So a pitcher like Zach Thornton, everybody, if you're interested, keep your eye on him this year. My guess is he's going to start in Binghamton, and then they'll move him up, hopefully, because I could see him being ready to pitch next year. But I think it's more likely that he'll, when I say next year, I'm talking, after the All-Star break or after the trade deadline, because I put an ETA of 2028 for full-time roster, for active roster.
Santucci and Wenninger. Now, Wenninger got some buzz this spring, pitched in some big league games. You have Santucci ahead of him. I'm looking at these guys. When you start to look up and down this top 10 prospect list, you go back to who likely could be the next one to start if there's an injury and they still want to keep a six-man rotation. You got Tong and Scott, but let's say that they're still working through some things in AAA. I think when they get called up, they're here for good. Is Yoander Suarez like the next guy? You've got Joel Pintaro. Maybe it's a Carl Edwards for a start because he's kind of like a long guy, but they've had him as a starter. He started in the minor leagues. Waddell has some issues. Robert Stock looks like he's going to be out for the year. You have Tobias Myers, although I think he's more of a bulk reliever. I don't like him so much the second time around the order. Who's likely to get the call here? If starters number 7, 8, and 9, is it Tong and Scott? Is Suarez jumping ahead of them? Where do you see the depth of the rotation? You're going to need 10 guys, 11 guys, maybe 12. If they have good health, maybe not so much, but let's assume they need at least 10 guys. That means there's four pitchers yet to be named that we're going to have to see starts from in 2026.
I don't think it's going to be Wenninger. Now, the reason he's got his velocity ticked up last year, which is great. His out pitch, and his what he really has is an effective splitter. And not that many guys in the minor leagues or in college have splitters. We all know that. So somebody with a splitter gets attention because that splitter is it's an out pitch. I mean, it's the thing that strikes people out. The problem is he's not going to be able to go into the major leagues with just an effective splitter and a pretty good, a decent fastball. He's going to need another pitch, much like Tong, although Tong is a much better fastball, and he's got that gyro slider. Wenninger is going to have to show me a lot more, or he could end up being another guy who's an interesting high leverage bullpen guy.
When you start to look at the organization, you have to start to blend in the fact that they've overhauled the pitching coach at the big league level. And, I've also questioned, how much driveline influence they've had, in the organization at this point. There is a little bit, the director of pitching is from driveline. And there's always debate about how good or bad driveline is. What do you think about the new pitching coach, Justin Willard? I've liked what I've heard. Throw your stuff in the zone, throw strikes. Very young, comes from the Red Sox organization, who have had some success in developing pitchers in recent years. Give us your thoughts on the trend, the direction the organization's going, and what are your thoughts on that? Any insights to Willard? Any insights to what you see as the philosophy up and down the organization? Because I think Stearns, from an offensive side as well, likes to have a contiguous up to down philosophy that aligns from the day you're drafted all the way to the big league roster. They want to have everybody working kind of similarly on the same things.
So one of the things I'll say, I'll cover two of your comments there. So I don't think the Mets are going to need 10 starting or 12 starting pitchers. I think it's probably more like 8 or 9. Remember, they've got Tobias Myers, which, by the way, the trade that brought over Peralta and Myers, I think, was one of the best
So
trades.
you're not crying over Sprout, you're not crying over Jet Williams.
Not
If
at
they
all.
lose Peralta at the end of the year, they get a draft pick, and they have control of Myers for a few years. You still, even if Sprout's in the rotation in Milwaukee and Jet Williams is a starting second baseman, wherever, you feel that it was worth it for 1 year Peralta and what Myers could potentially be.
Well, I felt even last year when we talked that Sproat was a candidate to be traded. His fastball didn't have enough movement. And when you have a flat fastball, you're really, I'm not, maybe he'll be successful. I mean, I hope so. But I just, if you're going to trade somebody from the talent that they had in the top five pitchers, he was the one to trade. There's no doubt in my mind. And I'll tell you right now, and I would trade Wenninger if they had to put a pitcher, a young pitcher, into a deal. But there's a lot of misconceptions out there about pitching. And one of the things, I mean, we'll talk about this. Somebody was commenting on Baseball Night in New York, one of the panelists, that McClain didn't have enough innings last year. Well, wrong. Luckily, John Harper corrected him. And I mentioned it here. He had 162 innings pitched last year, which puts him on track for 180, 185 this year, maybe even 190 without.
And you have to factor in the postseason. You got to figure if they go deep at the postseason, you're going to want another, maybe 18 innings out of him if you really go far. So it's, you might need him for 200 innings, depending on how deep he goes. The six-man rotation probably mitigates some of that, let's face it, but still,
Well, and they could do a piggyback thing with the six-man rotation too, where Senga starts a game and pitches five or maybe six, and then Manaea comes in and he finishes the game. That saves your bullpen as well. And when you have a guy like Tobias Myers who can easily pitch 3 or 4 innings, or you have somebody like Brazoban, who I think is going to make he's been excellent. And Brazoban last year, he was great at the beginning of the year, great at the end of the year. And what happened? He got overused at the beginning of the year, just like a whole bunch of their relievers did. And people scream about that, but you don't understand. If you're getting overused, what you forget is that these guys are warming up even when they don't
Yep,
pitch.
they get hot. That's the big thing. When you are evaluating your bullpen, you have to put the getting hot into the equation and make sure if you get them hot, you responsibly get them hot for
And
sure.
that could have had something to do with the criticism Ottavino had of what was going on in the Mets bullpen and Mendoza's use, is that relief pitchers are very cognizant of the warm-up procedure. And everyone has a little bit different procedure to warming up. The guys who take longer to warm up are really in, they're in trouble if they're asked to get up too often. There are some guys who can warm up real, I think Diaz was a pretty quick warmer upper. And that's, basically a good thing if you're in the bullpen, but you've got to be so careful. So I don't know if I answered your questions there.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, you have an interesting group of coaches here. You have Justin Willard, you have Dan McKinney, who has been with the organization. He's the assistant pitching coach, and is probably and probably knows a lot of these young pitchers. Interesting, they put him in there. Eric Yeagers is that director of pitching. Now he's the driveline guy.
And by the way, Willard is not a driveline and not a tread guy. So tread and driveline are really the two places where players go, pitchers go in particular, to work on their bodies and work on their approach and work on new pitches and grips. But driveline and tread are set up to really biomechanically analyze every pitcher. I put a link in under Ben Simon's write-up. He's an honor, one of the two honorable mentions, and it's a really interesting look at how tread worked with him. And I would encourage everybody to hit that link and watch that video. It's fascinating. And it's what's happening to so many pitchers now who go to these places, college pitchers, even high school pitchers, and pro pitchers. And it's a whole different thing. It's probably a lot of it's beyond my capacity to really understand because it has so much to do with biomechanics. And I was at a party for one of the major league teams a few weeks ago, and I had a nice, interesting conversation with one of their biomechanical scientists. And one of the things that we talked about was people don't remember. Ted Williams was kind of the original launch angle guy. And there are
That
folks.
book, The Art of Hitting, what is the science of hitting, whatever, Ted Williams' book, still very relevant today.
Yeah, and this fellow worked for the Red Sox, and I said, all over the ballpark here, there's all these quotes from Ted Williams, and they're interesting, and it's really fascinating to walk around. I said, but do you know that Ted Williams had 20/10 vision in both eyes? He said, no, I didn't know that. I said, okay, he was a fighter pilot, which you have to have great vision to be a fighter pilot. He was 3 years in World War II, took away from his career, 2 years in Korea. And the reason he was such a great hitter were his eyes. I mean, yes, he had great mechanics. He did everything right, but he wasn't a great outfielder, and he wasn't a great base runner. He wasn't, I mean, but he was a great hitter, and the eyes have it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, remember how Tommy Pham worked on his vision when he was with the Mets, and all of a sudden he kind of regained his form? And you get, sometimes you forget you got blurry vision, you're not going to see the ball as well,
That's right.
especially with
That's right.
the kind of spin, the kind of velocity, and everything like that. Do you like the six-man rotation? I know Freddie Peralta came out this week and said he's okay with it. I know Ron Darling's been critical and saying, hey, it's time for Kodai Senga to matriculate his way into a North America, United States rotation. I don't think this is about Senga anymore. I personally think that they have six starters. They want to use six starters. I question if they're going to make it through the season with six viable starters. Manaea's already given them some concerns, I guess I would say. And it'll be interesting. What are your thoughts on the six-man rotation? Because it's going to be an adjustment. It's going to hurt guys in getting starts, could hurt them with their free agency numbers, potentially. And if mathematically, you're reducing a Peralta start by three or four, which might come back to bite you if you don't win the division by a game or two, or don't make the postseason by a game or two. So it's interesting. Now, if they all pitch to what you think they could, then every day you're going to get a good starter and a starter that should get you to the sixth or seventh inning. That's a big if, though, because you didn't see that last year.
Well, the difference between being an ace or a second starter is you'd have 32. If you had 5-man rotation, you have 32 starts roughly, and you're going to get 28. If you're, the 3, 4, 5, you're going to probably, instead of getting 30 starts, you're probably going to get 27. So it's not really, I don't think that's the big deal. Today, guys aren't going the distance. So you have to find a way to, you have to pitch your innings, but you have to keep the innings under a certain amount. And for most guys now, they're talking 180 or 190 innings is the max.
Sure.
When
Yep.
Tom Seaver was pitching for the Mets, I mean, he and Kuzman, they were pitching 240 innings every year.
You know, fans want to look at innings. Look at Fernando Valenzuela, like from Fernando Mania up until 1987. And then I think he blew out his arm. I think it was his shoulder. Maybe it was his shoulder. 88, 89, he started to decline a little bit. And then he had a period where he was in and out. You know, had to go back to the Mexican League to reestablish himself. But look at the kind of innings that are Fernando Valenzuela, 20 complete games in 1986. I mean, compare that to today. And that's the 80s. That's not the 60s and the 70s. That's the 80s, you know, and that tells you kind of where we've come. And I'm not saying that you go back to that, but we can push. I've always said you can push pitchers to 110 pitches. There's nothing wrong with 110 pitches. Maybe 120, depending on the how heavy, how intense, how laborious the outing is. But I think 110 is reasonable. I really do. 90 to 100, I think, is light. I think we have to get back to pitchers going to 110, because on the flip side, for as much as you're saving your rotation arms, you're just decimating your bullpen. Decimating your bullpen. And then on top of it, you have the shuttle, which I think the shuttle's going to be challenging this year for the Mets, because you know what's going to happen? The shuttle's going to be Brazenbaum and Myers, who you're high on Brazenbaum, higher than I am. Myers, I think, could be a very good arm out of the bullpen. I'm not so sure he's a starter. His numbers, the you have to pitch his, you know,
Much better as a
much
reliever.
better for the first 25 to 50 pitches. You're going to have to shuttle those guys unless you want to lose an arm. And it'll be interesting how they fill out the bullpen. I think Kimbrel might make it. I think if Kimbrel makes it, that's probably at the expense of Brazenbaum, or they only go with him and not the second lefty, Brian Hudson. We'll know in the next week because his opt-out is coming up, I think, next week, next Saturday or something like that. So where do you see, you know, you see Brazenbaum making the team. Where do you see the rest of the bullpen? And obviously, Minter's going to be available health-wise
By May.
May. So really, there's not a lot of shuttling you can do. You're going to have these guys go a little deeper, or to your point, piggyback. Maybe on the throw day, Holmes is available. Maybe on the throw day, Manaea is available. There's going to be a lot of possibilities. And if you remember, you know, fans don't realize, if you go back to, and I know this is dating myself, the 60s, guys like Don Drysdale would get six, seven, eight relief appearances during the season. I don't know if it was because out of need, or maybe on their throw days, the team was saying, because they didn't have a lot of bullpen arms back then, hey, come in and eat some innings for me, or come in and we need you. Like, if you look, even Sandy Koufax had some bullpen utilization. Not as much as
Well,
a Drysdale or guys like that, but you know.
I think Manaea having that different look and that different angle, the different eye level that you have to apply, is a likely, and having bullpen experience is a likely guy, if they go to a piggyback situation where he'll come in the fifth inning or something and try to go as many innings as he can to save the bullpen and just bring in a closer for the last inning if necessary. I like the breakdown of arms that they have. I also th I really like what I saw from Senga the other day. And you know, they Peralta is a pro. He not only has a great attitude, he has a great mound presence, he has a great dugout presence. This is a guy who a lot of the young pitchers can learn from. So I'm not that worried, but I think a six-man rotation that could end up being a piggyback thing is, and with Tobias Myers as a guy who could come in and give you three innings, I mean, I think they're set, and I think that bullpen's going to be a lot more effective if they're just pitching in the eighth and ninth inning. And I
Yeah.
think that's what Stearns and Willard are moving towards.
You want to get, I've always said, perfect world, you get six outs out of your bullpen. Realistically, if you could get eight, I'd sign for that every night. I think eight's reasonable. I could deal with nine. Once you get past that nine, where you need 11 to 12, you're putting the game in jeopardy. You're burning the bullpen up. And I think that that was one of the problems with the team last year. Even when they were winning early in the season, they had to get 12 outs out of that bullpen. That's a lot of outs, night in and
Oh,
night out. A
yeah.
lot of outs.
Well,
Not to
everybody.
mention the overutilization of the closer. And look, they were really good with managing Diaz's innings. They've always been good with managing Diaz's innings. I don't know if they'll do the same thing with Williams. I don't know enough about how he reacts. Diaz was very finicky. You had to make sure you handled him appropriately, especially early in the season when it seemed like in the last couple of years since his injury, he was building up velocity. Where do you see the final bullpen? You see Brazenbaum, and then where do you see, so you've got,
Oh,
let's say
Brooks.
seven, and then you have the core five.
Yeah.
Brazenbaum is six, so you have one spot left at that point.
Yeah.
So is it Hudson? Is it Kimbrel? I think Alzolay is going to start in the minors, so I don't think we're going to see him. He's interesting. I think he'd be an interesting arm. And then obviously no Lambert, no Dylan Bross. Who else, may pop their name into the equation out of the system? I guess we'll see. But who do you see grabbing that final spot if Brazenbaum makes the team?
I think it'll be somebody who could throw multiple innings, an Austin Warren, somebody who is not just comfortable coming in and pitching one inning.
Gotcha.
And that's the future of bullpens. I think the future of bullpens is to have two closers, two long guys, and everybody else in there, maybe one other guy is a short, setup guy, but then two or three guys who could pitch two, three
Hey,
innings.
listen, back in the day, again, I'm saying the 80s, 90s, you'd have a Roger McDowell go multiple innings, a
Yeah.
Tim Burke,
Well, even
guys like
Orozco
that.
did. Orozco
Yeah,
did
even Jesse
too.
Orosco go a couple innings. I think you're right. You need to get to that at this point.
Yeah, I mean it makes sense, and I think that it's only a matter of time. And by the way, the driveline and tread, what they're doing is getting pitchers to pitch at their maximum performance, okay? Which means throwing harder earlier. In the old days, a pitcher would start with this fastball in the first inning, had some movement, especially two seamers, which now everybody calls a sinker, they would not even go to a secondary pitch until the second or third inning, or maybe even later. Now everybody's throwing everything hard from the first inning, and they're throwing the pitches with lots of spin. And when you throw lots of spin, you're putting some effort into your elbow and other things and shoulder. Change ups are supposed to affect the shoulder a little bit more. But I think that all of it leads us to believe that you're not going to have guys who throw hard pitching, even into the eighth inning. It's just not, and we don't see it. We don't see
No,
it.
you
In
don't
fact,
see it.
we're all shocked and we all talk about, oh, he went into the eighth
Right,
inning.
right.
It's
When
like
I
a
was at the
laugh.
game last year when David Peterson pitched the complete game against the Nats, and that was a big deal. It was a
Yeah.
big deal, and there was a lot of wrestling with that decision that Carlos Mendoza did. As we wrap up here, you're working on and we'll be releasing in the near future the positional prospect side. The debate today in the open. After Lambert got sent down, I had said, hey, I think Talkman makes the team. I think the Mets send Mauricio down and they bring either Arroyo or Brujan as their utility guy on the bench to kind of give them some flexibility in case Lindor needs a blow or, Simeon needs a blow. They really haven't. I know they had Acuña last year, but in prior years, they never really had a true, middle infield. I know there was McNeil, but someone who could play all around the infield. So I could see that. I know there was a that when, if Benj gets sent down, there's going to be a lot of angry fans. They felt he's earned the position. I think he's had a nice spring. Unlike Pete Alonso, who had established himself in the minor leagues with a solid 2018 season and almost got called up late in 2018, Benj has had a cup of coffee at AAA. And it wouldn't kill him to be at least down in the minors for 4 to 6 weeks. There's no harm in that. Talkman's a pro, and the floor of what Talkman provides, which is let's say 280, 12 home runs, 50 to 60 RBIs, that's not chopped liver. And you could survive. More likely, I could see Benj getting the call with a Robert Jr. injury than it is Talkman not performing. I also think the roster construction with both Talkman and Benj on is a bit clumsy. A bit, not terrible, especially with Vientos there. And a lot of fans are now saying, well, I want Vientos off because he has no value other than a stick and he's blocking Benj now. So there's a lot of that fan conversation. obviously the Mets haven't really tipped their hand of how they're going to build the roster. You do know Arroyo's still around, Brujas still around, Benji's still around, Talkman's still around. Decisions have to be made in the next week. And here's the kicker. You don't even think Benji's the best positional prospect in the system. So I'll let you. That's a lot to dive into here as we tease and wrap up this segment and tease what's to come with David Mills' positional prospect,
Well,
top
okay,
positional prospect for 2026.
so let's get into it. So one of the things about prospect ranking that everybody has to understand, it's not about who gets to the big leagues first. It's about who has the most compelling career. When I'm looking at these prospects, I'm saying, okay, is this guy more likely to have a more compelling career than this guy? And it may not be with the Mets. I'm not just ranking them with the idea that they're going to play with, we'll be lucky. So these pitching prospects, I have 10 guys and two honorable mentions. Maybe four of them will actually pitch for the Mets at some point. But the hope is that a couple of them have a compelling career. That would be a big success. Now, one or two might have a compelling career somewhere else. That's happened. If you remember Octavio Dotel, right? He had a long and kind of impressive career as a middle reliever, and you know, there's other guys who had similar situations, but it's about sustaining a career as well. So I've moved AJ, and this is, we'll just tease the upcoming positional prospect. AJ Ewing is a phenomenal prospect, and his. And this is taking nothing away from Benj. Benj is an excellent
I was
prospect.
extremely impressed with AJ Ewing. I
Yes.
looked at a guy that reminded me of Brett Butler, maybe a Kenny Lofton upside. I mean, look, Benj, they have a Nick Markakis comp, Kyle Tucker, you've heard, Steve Finley. These are all very impressive comps, and they can land any way. And they're all solid big leaguers. And big leaguers have long careers and very valuable offensive pieces for a Mets team
Yes.
that, since McNeil and Alonso, has been lacking on the impact offensive front, let's face it.
And what AJ Ewing has, which I think I'm the only one who's put him into the number one spot. And here's the reason: elite speed. This is game-breaking speed, and it's evident in his work at second base. He's actually a pretty good second baseman, and he has very good range. He is now mostly playing the outfield. He has superb range in the outfield. His arm is not the strongest, but it's accurate. But here's the thing. He hits right-handed pitching and left-handed pitching equally well. In fact, I think his against lefties, he's a left-handed hitter. He was like 318 and 316 for righties, or maybe the other way around. But that's really unusual among a young player moving up rapidly. He'll probably start the year at Binghamton. I would say he's going to definitely end the year at Syracuse. For Benj, again, taking nothing away from him, he's a great prospect, and I don't want to see them trade either one of those guys. But Benj is not quite as versatile. He could play the outfield, all the outfield positions. I don't see him as a center fielder because he doesn't have that kind of elite speed. But he also is a left-handed hitter who definitely hits right-handed pitching better. But he's very competent against left-handed pitching. He's a terrific prospect, but AJ Ewing is something super special, and I think he's opened eyes, and that's the reason they got rid of Jett Williams. I mean,
Yeah, I agree.
they
I
didn't need
agree on
Jett
that.
Williams anymore, and
Yeah.
I don't know if Jett Williams, who basically plays the same positions, is even as an infielder. I'm not sure he's any better, but as a center fielder, he's nowhere close.
Right.
So that's why we're gonna go with AJ Ewing, and again, nothing against Benj. And
I'm
there's
sure
some
there'll be
other
some
instances.
surprises too. Jacob Reimer has opened up some
Yep.
eyes this spring. And look, the pitching has been all the rage in camp for the Mets. And look, that's where everything starts. But I think it'll be interesting to see how they fare on the positional side
Well,
because.
it should be because the pitching, I think there's a deeper. Of course, there's more positional players, but there's a deeper, frontline bench of prospects, in pitching, the guys that I mentioned here, and a few others. Every team depends on pitching and defense. I don't care what it is. What killed the Mets last year? Their
Yeah,
hitting was
pitching.
fine. Yeah, it was their
They're hitting
pitching
at
and their defense.
some inconsistencies, but let's face it, the pitching is what eventually undid them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know
And
that. We know.
that's what I think Stearns fully understands that, and
Right.
his the other
Yep.
people in his front office. And
Sure.
that's what we're getting a look at. We're getting a look at how to
Right.
build roster construction that works throughout their system.
Yeah.
I think we're lucky to be able to look at some of these guys, take a deep dive, and come up with our own opinions. Everybody who reads this and who listens to this
Yep.
podcast are going to come up with their own opinions. That's what makes it fun.
Well, Dave, we could go on and on and on. You've been generous with your time. I'm looking forward to reading the positional prospects. And listen, if you're out there and you're not a subscriber yet, at the very least, subscribe for free. Dave's analysis is always free for everybody over at Talking Mike, Talking Mac, Talking Mike, Talking Mets Extra Innings, and highly recommend giving his analysis a really deep look and comparing it to what's out there. And I think it provides a little bit of a unique and different and important perspective that the Mets community could use. So, Dave, listen, enjoy the rest of your
Hey,
Sunday.
thanks, man.
We'll do this
Have a good one.
again. And David Mills joining me in the back half of this program. That's it, guys. Long show, final week of spring training upon us. And what are your thoughts? Next week we'll do some mailbag. Next week we'll do some season thoughts. I don't like doing predictions, but I'd like to hear your thoughts. I'll put out in the chat some commentary from you, email, thoughts about the season, what you're looking for, what you like, what you don't like, what you expect. And by this time next week, I think the roster should pretty much be set. So all the conversations about positional battles will be over. The minor leaguers will be reporting to their respective camps. And the grind begins. The getting to know you phase begins as we wrap up spring training in this final week, the dog days of spring training. Some decisions to be made, not easy ones, but these are good problems to have. So, anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify. Pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Get updates for free, chat, interact with the show, all at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then. Take care, everybody.